I'm with Jayant Chaudhary, the vice president of the Rashtriya Lokdal, a party which has predominant influence in western Uttar Pradesh, in the areas of Muzaffarnagar, Baghpat, Mathura. Jayant himself lost in Baghpat last year, has not been an MP for the last 10 years since the Narendra Modi government came to power. In fact, the RLD doesn't have any seats in the Lok Sabha, but nevertheless, Jayant Chaudhary, welcome to the print.
Hi.
So, perhaps my viewers are wondering why I'm talking to you, because you really do not have a political presence in the Lok Sabha at all. But when you were an MP in 2009 to 14, this is during the second UPA, you were a member of several standing committees on agriculture, on income, commerce, finance. And today, perhaps when this farmers' agitation around Delhi, around the borders of Delhi has entered its 40th day, you're perhaps one of the few political leaders that is still on the ground talking to the people. So give us a flavor, Jayant, of what is happening on the ground and what the farmers are saying.
Well, it's a very organic sort of movement, and it's bottom up. And it's great for democracy that even now people feel, you know, sort of the confidence to come out and express themselves in the way they have. Mm-hmm. And it's tremendously well organized. You know, in all the history of farmer agitation, this is perhaps one of the best organized and the most disciplined, you know, large scale movement we have seen in at least the last two or three decades. Mm-hmm. I've been to the Singhu border. I went to Shahjahanpur, where people from as far as Ganganagar and Rajasthan have, you know, some have come in tractors. A lot of people have just walked. A lot of people have left their homes, their villages, and come. So a lot of people are expressing solidarity with the movement, and the numbers are growing. And from my conversations with the young people there, with the older people there, you know, people have come with entire families. I saw little toddlers, 6, 7, 8 children. Tum yahan kya kar rahe ho? So they said, we are here to, because our family is here and we feel the government is intruding on farmers' rights. So that level of awareness and that level of commitment that I saw was very, very high. And in my conversations, I realized that there is no way that these people are going to turn back. They feel it is their right. They feel it is their Rajdhani and it is their government. And they want to ask the government some hard, searing questions right now.
So, you know, it seems that these two positions are so diverse today. The government is absolutely determined. 7 rounds of talks have just taken place. The 8th round is scheduled for the 8th of January. But the government is saying it's not going to go back on the 3 farm laws. The farmers are saying ki jab tak aap inko repeal nahi karte tab tak aur koi baat cheet nahi ho sakti. So two very, very divergent positions. What do you make of what the center is saying?
I think government, frankly, is acting very bullheaded. You don't come up with legislation in a vacuum. You only come up with laws and reforms and policies in consonance with public demand, right? After all, it is a democracy. And yes, it is a representative democracy where we assume that the government in charge knows what the public sentiment is. But here, on the other hand, you have such a large-scale demonstration of people coming out. You know, they've borne the brunt of state power. They've come here after facing lathis and, you know, water cannons and, you know, what all. Everything the state governments threw at them, they saw all that. They came through all of that. So there is a massive expression of public discontent. And mm-hmm. despite that, the government is so self-assured, so self-confident, it's almost brazen. And you don't sit on a table and discuss and negotiate when you say, this is our condition. You know, we're not going to step back. Then what's the point of having 8, 10, 15 rounds of discussion? You're not going to see any headway.
But it is self-confident, Jayant. The fact is that your party has absolutely no presence in the Lok Sabha. So why are you even relevant? I mean, what is your local standard?
See, I mean, that's also an indicator of how political identities have shifted. And these have always been very fluid. The identities around which political discourse and narratives get built and how elections get fought and won. You know, our basic core plank of our party is from Chaudhary Charan Singh's time has been, you know, rural issues, agrarian reforms, farmers, their welfare. Unfortunately, the last Lok Sabha election really was about showing Pakistan its place. And I'm not saying you can't question a verdict. It was a massive verdict, a huge majority in a second term. So definitely voters express their confidence. But I do feel that in all of that, the political voice of farmers has gotten weakened. And that is why they're being forced to come out and agitate. There's only two ways a farmer can express themselves in India. Either the representative stands up for them in parliament or they stand up on the roads.
But the fact is that, you know, the Shiromani Akali Dal, the oldest ally of the BJP, also walked out on the same issue. It doesn't really matter to the BJP because it is such a strong political force that it's irrelevant who walks out and who doesn't.
It is, but, you know, even a majoritarian government is always walking on thin ice because people in India are always judging everything. And again, you'll have to enter that cycle of elections and you'll have to go back to the same people that you are now assuming are in your pocket. So, I mean, it's a vote for 5 years and it's a vote based on certain issues and certain promises that you have made. You said that we're going to double farmer incomes. Now, this new legislation, all three bills, if you look at them, and the farmers have understood very well that it's not going to really help them in any way. In fact, it's going to push them back. So I think in the face of that, I expect government to be more sensitive. You know, BJP, whatever you might say, I'm in the opposition, but they know how to fight elections. They know how to communicate. Mm-hmm. They have now, in the last course of 6-7 years, built up some semblance of an organization that does give them feedback. Right. So I would assume that they would know that the farmers actually are very angry. And you can't just shrug that off.
But what is the problem here? If you look at one of the three farm laws, and that's the main point on which the farmers are agitating, which is that they want a minimum support price for their crop, whether it's paddy or wheat, or in your part of the world, in Western UP, it's sugarcane. But you want a minimum support price. But the question is, ki private market ke andar, private मंडीज के अंदर आप अगर बाहर से कोई पेप्सी या कोई कोई दूसरा अगर आपके आपका प्रोड्यूस खरीदना चाहता है सो व्हाई वुड यू थोपो मिनिमम सपोर्ट प्राइस ऑन दैट प्राइवेट प्लेयर
सी आई मीन दिस इज गोइंग टू बी अ ह्यूज शिफ्ट इन द वे एग्री मार्केट्स हैव फंक्शनड एंड दिस इज नॉट समथिंग दैट यू डू विद अ रेवोल्यूशन बिकॉज़ अ रेवोल्यूशन विल लीव अ लॉट ऑफ ब्लडशेड. There are about 2,477 regulated agri markets, what you call APMCs. These fall under the domain of the state government. Now you come up with a central law that is forbidding state APMC laws, which are, you know, laws enacted by in a federal structure by state governments, well within their right. You are forbidding them from taking any levy or market cess or any fees. So what's going to happen is trade is going to shift out of the mandi. So here is a market which is functioning. Yes, it's, you know, in fact, government should have gone the other way and developed agri-mandis in, say, Eastern UP or in Bihar or more developed markets in Madhya Pradesh and Rajasthan. You know, in Rajasthan, for instance, if you look at wheat, only 4% of Rajasthan's wheat farmers are actually part of the procurement exercise. Mm-hmm. Uttar Pradesh is the largest wheat producer. Only 7% of our farmers are actually in the procurement exercise. So instead of expanding the net, and you know, government is should be aware that they keep declaring MSPs, that MSP is not really reaching out to a large section of India's farmers.
But
what I'm saying is, yeah. Instead of expanding the net, instead of developing the market infrastructure, state cannot just withdraw. What's going to happen is you're going to create a system where in large parts of our country, the private sector is going to enjoy a huge majority, you know, where in states.
But that's the point, Jayant, and I think you're making the BJP's point, exactly the same point that in UP, which you talk about, if only 7% of the farmers are part of this state network, 93% of the farmers are already part of the private players' network, right? So that is what the BJP is saying, is that you have to, that, you know, land holdings are shrinking. You have to be able.
So then, my point, Jyoti, is it's not really a farmer bill then, is it? If you wanted to do reform for the farmer, you should have built those markets. Why is the state saying, hey, we're not going to build any more markets? Let the private sector do this. Is the government ready to outsource entire agri policy to to a few companies. In a sense, that's what they're admitting to. The state can't build a market in Uttar Pradesh. They have a market in Punjab, Haryana. You want to demolish that. You're saying, chalo, it's only two states and we're not going to build a market in UP. Wahan to private trade, hey, let private trade flourish. What is that?
But you would agree that agriculture desperately needs reform. I mean, we have been, you know, the benefits of the Green Revolution have been far outdated. You cannot bank on that anymore. In Punjab, for example, it costs many more times to produce 1 kilo of paddy. I think it costs 5,000 liters of water, and that's just one small element of it. So agriculture definitely needs reform.
Well, reform is going to happen via government policy and government intervention, which is my point. I'm saying the government is, in a sense, withdrawing. And if you look at the health of the government infrastructure, it's very, very poor. Look at FCI. In the last many years, our federal government has stopped giving FCI money. You know, so just to keep their fiscal deficit figure low and to balance their budget, they're not giving FCI their due on time. And what's the result? Now FCI has about on its own books 3,80,000 crore rupees in debt. And also our warehouses are more than double. Our stock is more than double what is the norm. So farmers realize that the government doesn't really want to procure anymore. And that is why there is fear. And if you look at, you know, this whole mindset that corporate India knows best, corporate India can manage best. Let corporate India do everything and everything will be perfect. It's very sort of a wishy-washy sentiment and it's not really rooted in any fact. Let me take you back in the 64th Nagpur session of Congress Party, 1959. Jawaharlal Nehru was pushing for cooperative farming. Again, the notion was the state knows best. Let the state come in. We're going to consolidate land. We're going to give proper technology inputs and we're going to increase production. That was the main thrust of Nehruji's argument. And Chaudhary Charan Singh, who's also part of Congress, stood up and opposed it. My grandfather, he opposed it. He said, no, if you're going to remove the farmer from his land, production isn't going to go up. In the short term, you may see a rise, but it's immoral for the state to assume and take over land that's owned by farmers. These are tricky issues. You know, and what's happening now is government is giving, in a sense, creating monopolies for corporate India in a space where it's going to be, immoral for the state to really step back. There are good examples out there. There is corporate farming.
Sure.
Sorry, there's contract farming in sugar. Hmm. You know sugar. The sugar industry is, if you look at Western Uttar Pradesh, it's thriving. And you have private sugar mills. But the state has a role. It's the state that determines the price. So why declare MSP at all if government doesn't want to step in and mandate that, yes, whether it's private trade or government trade is going to happen at that rate? What's the problem?
Yeah, but let me just ask you here, Jayant, you mentioned your grandfather, Chaudhary Charan Singh, who was also former Prime Minister of India. And this big debate between his form of his politics and that of Jawaharlal Nehru in the 60s when both of them were in the Congress Party. And I think Chaudhary Saab represented a certain sort of middle peasant castes. And we will talk about the politics of that later. But my question to you is, that today you say you have gone to some of these protest sites around Delhi where the protests have been taking place for the last 40 days. You're perhaps the only one, or have other people also gone with you, other political leaders?
Well, from my party, I have gone along with some other leaders, but I think some others also may be making efforts in their own way.
But the point is that it's been 40 days. Why is it that several politicians, you don't see any political parties on the sites, on the protest sites? Why is that?
See, political parties have a role that they can, express issues in a certain way, in a certain format. And I think when these bills were put up and the way they were thrust on India, and during that parliamentary process, a lot of the opposition parties did in fact protest. And ever since those ordinances came out, all of us have been saying that these are wrong. They're not going to be accepted by India's farmers.
But you're not on the ground.
You're
not on the ground.
See, there are many parallels in contemporary Indian history. If you look at the Lokpal movement, who was the sponsor of that movement? Who was the sponsor of the protests in Delhi after Nirbhaya rape? Mm-hmm. So when there is popular sentiment and emotion, then people come on their own. That is what has happened. And it's not as if we are not there. We are supporting these issues. These are our own very issues. But it's a good sign, in fact, that
you would rather
they are led by people.
But you would rather stay in the background?
I think, the farmer organizations are very, very, they're able to put their points of view, very credibly. They're able to hold their own in government negotiations. So therefore, we should trust them. There's no reason for us not to trust them.
The biggest opposition party, the Congress party, also, 52 seats in the Lok Sabha, even they are not there. All your young colleagues in parties like the Congress.
No, I think Dipinder now is making some efforts. I've seen on social media, at least, he has gone to the points in Haryana. But that's for Congress party to give a call, take a call on how they want to express solidarity with farmers they want for themselves.
But
I can't really question them or answer on their behalf.
Right. But the point is that in a moment like this, which is a moment of enormous crisis that we are witnessing on a daily basis, don't you think that the opposition parties can come together at least on this issue?
Well, they have. See, I mean, again, I'm going to repeat myself. They've gone to the president. They've stood up in parliament. We can issue statements in media. I've been on ground. I'm helping whatever organizations there are, trying to sustain the movement. That's what I think. That's for the moment. That's an appropriate role and strategy, because this government is so very good at throwing labels. You've heard so many labels. Terms that we'd never knew existed. And somehow they become part of political narrative. What was love jihad? Does anyone know what love jihad is, even now? But it's being bandied about now. Laws are being made in support. So ultimately, government tried to label these farmers as Khalistani. The international sentiment or support is coming to them. Terrorist or some sort of dangerous element is part of this, support network. And if political parties had given a call that, chalo, we're going to now get India's parliament, Kisan Ghat, then ultimately BJP would have said, this is just a petty political exercise. It's not rooted in any fact. So at least now, because it's such an organic and massive movement, government has had to give it certain, seriousness has come into the whole exercise, and they've had to negotiate that.
But would you say that opposition parties today have been slower to react to this, that they should have been much more in front?
I've been part of the system. I've been outside the system. I can function as an activist. I can be on stage. Sometimes good leadership is also about walking with the people. You can't always assume that you know everything and you know what's best for the country and keep giving direction and orders. Sometimes if there's public sentiment, you have to side with that sentiment and sort of walk along, or sometimes even walk behind people. I think that's what's happening, and that's not necessarily bad. Yes, opposition is very weak. If opposition wasn't weak, then you'd see better numbers in parliament. So the opposition is weak, and this hankering for this leadership that will come up with easy solutions and this great leadership that will emerge, I think that's indicative of not much maturity in our democracy. Voters need to think about it. Hmm. Ultimate power rests with voters. So until voters stand up and identify what issues they want to vote on and start voting on those lines, you're going to see oppositions that are going to be weak, especially in today's domain and context where, okay, you are independent media and online digital media, we're seeing new things come up. Social media is becoming active. But look at mainstream media. Look at the institutions of our country. Hmm. They all want to side with whoever is powerful. So I think that weakening has happened, and it's been last 6 years, you've seen dramatically a lot of downfall in the sort of trust people had in those institutions. So when the government of the day enjoys a huge majority, they've taken over many of these parallel institutions and voices, to expect opposition to really come up and create a movement is maybe perhaps a little it's not going to happen.
But why is it not going to happen? I mean, that's what the opposition is for. I mean, Rahul Gandhi, one of the top leaders of the Congress party, is not even in India as we speak. He's somewhere abroad. We don't know whether he's holidaying or whether he's gone on work, but he's missing in action.
Yeah, well, I can't comment on that. But basically, you know, if you talk about the farmers movement, what Rahul Gandhi or Jayant Chaudhary or Akhilesh Yadav or Tejaswi or any one of us can actually stand up and say, any 20-year-old boy that Andolan is actually capable of doing the same thing. And they are actually, in the way they've structured this agitation, I feel very confident that ultimately it's the government that's going to have to take a step back.
But
so if you look at it, it's
yeah.
a successful agitation then.
It is a successful agitation without the presence of your colleagues, the people you mentioned, Akhilesh Yadav, Behenji Mayawati, both of them, the BSP and the SP, they're part of your of the same alliance that you are, the Rashtriya Lokdal. Nobody has been on the ground. I mean, it's quite
They're all perhaps there in their own way. Again, I'm not here to answer for them or question their efforts.
Yeah.
Perhaps, but I think we've all expressed our solidarity with the farmers and how politically opposition parties can band together. I think there's a lot we can do. Sharad Pawarji did make a statement, but I think more concerted efforts need to be made just to express ourselves and to tell government that this is not just some haphazard movement that you can suppress. It is and pan-India. It's not just an issue about Haryana and Punjab. Ultimately, there are fears on MSP. There are fears on government procurement completely being done away with.
Yeah.
And those are going to affect every farmer in our country. So I think I get your point that at least opposition does need to communicate more effectively.
And you would agree with
that? I would agree with that. But again, that's not to question the veracity or the you know, the honesty, intellectual integrity of the movement that's happening today.
No, fair enough. And last couple of questions, Jayant. When you were an MP from 2009 to 2014, one of the most interesting bills that you actually put forward in the Lok Sabha was the land acquisition bill. Now, isn't that contradictory in terms that at the time you wanted, now this is 10 years ago, but at the time you thought that it was a good thing for agriculture if land were to be acquired. And today you're saying the opposite.
No, actually, it's contrary. The legislation we had before that, prior to 2013, was, you know, a British era legislation. And it has survived for about 113, 114 years. So it required change. And in that old law, there was a principle of eminent domain that granted absolute right to the state. The state could determine whose land will be acquired. And really, the landowners had very little they could do. So I think that was to correct that and to correct that imbalance and to give more power to landowners and to farmers to decide their own fate. I think that's what my intervention was for. So in a sense, even now I'm standing for citizens' rights over the state or over corporate India. So it's pretty consistent, I would say.
Jayant Chaudhary, thank you for your time, for speaking to The Print. You've spoken very frankly about not just the agitation and what the BJP or the center is doing, but about the role of the opposition parties again. Thank you again for speaking to The Print.
Thank you.